the Free For All Roundtable.
Round one.
On round one, Pavan Brach is here, serial entrepreneur in health and tech. Shelley Carroll, Toronto City Councillor, and as I was just learning, newly installed member of the Toronto Police Board. Larissa Waller is here, public affairs strategist, and good to have you all. Let's actually start with a couple of civic matters, and I'll start with City Councillor on that. City launching a crackdown on dangerous dogs, and apparently, Shelley Carroll, somebody is going to go to the door of every single one of these dogs. Who got the short straw?
Well, it's going to take a team, but they'll hit a few dogs every day so that it won't take an entire year, because there are enough dangerous dogs for a visit a day a year, but they're going to tackle it in a team and get to as many of them. It is to make sure that they're adhering, and also I believe there's an information campaign coming so that others who should be labeled as dangerous dogs will be apprised of this over time. But the number of dangerous dogs actually has reduced now to this amount. There's 360 odd dogs. People are realizing these are not the ones to buy.
Okay,
well,
so
they age out.
Yeah,
yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
But then you get new dogs who are awful.
Well, that's been less the case. So perhaps the legislation the province moved low those many years ago worked.
Larissa Waller, we're looking at apparently 363 problematic dogs in Toronto.
Yeah, you know, I don't love these bans, John. And I'll tell you a story. When I was in the premier's office, I remember in the news, you know, it kicked up again that we should reverse the pit bull ban. And we were like talking about it. Should we reverse the pit bull ban? And then like 2 days later, a pit bull attacked a child in the park. And we're like, well, too bad for that guy. The guy who wanted to reverse the pit bull ban. Because as much as we would like to pretend that there are no bad dogs in the world, there are dogs that are, you know, just more aggressive than other dogs. And those dogs require a heightened level of responsibility on the part of the owner.
Yeah.
If that owner is not living up to that heightened a role for government of all levels and law enforcement to play to keep kids safe, it's not on the child and it's not on the person walking down the street to have to police themselves and wonder, is that dog safe? So, you know, I hate this idea that we have to label dogs, that there will be signs up. It makes me uncomfortable. But at the end of the day, you know, it's the city's job, it's the province's job to keep the people safe.
Yeah, Pavan, if a sign was being put outside of my house, it would just say, Yappy Dog lives here.
Yappy but loved. Yeah, no, I don't know. Listen, I think a lot of people with nice cars like you, John, are going to be getting copies of these signs and putting them up on your houses so your car doesn't get stolen. You know, so I think there's going to be a big aftermarket.
The only person my dog would actually be nice to would probably be somebody stealing my car.
That's right. The keys are in the closet. Come take it. No, I think it's a colossal waste of time and money to be sending people to people's homes, you know, 364 people. I don't know, just pass a legislation that says these things are dangerous and you can't have them anymore. And I'm sorry, especially when there's such a huge risk. I don't know. And are we issuing, you know, dog trainer uniforms to these poor guys who have to go to these houses? So I think it's a waste of money. I think we should deal with it strictly through legislation.
We're getting new urban garbage cans today, apparently 11:30. The mayor will unveil them. And intriguingly, Shelley Carroll, I'll start with you again on this one. You said nobody at Toronto City Hall has seen even an artist rendering?
No, it's going to be like revealing the nominees for the Academy Awards. We were all standing around when the announcement went out. Oh, they're ready. What do they look like? Who's seen them? And, you know, you ask people who you think will have seen them, the deputy mayors and things like that. But the mayor's being very cagey. They're going to be announced, which is a risk. I hope we're all going to be surprised. It can't help but be an improvement. I think the city is unanimous on that.
Sure.
Anything would be an improvement.
Pavan, I don't need, it doesn't rise to the level of debatable, I guess, but do you take any interest in new garbage cans for the streets of Toronto?
It's a slow day in Toronto. No, I don't. I think it's interesting. You know, listen, my only comment would be, you know, you've got those three choices, it seems, all the time, and it keeps getting, it's so confusing what to throw where. You know, 50% of the world's plastic pollution is being generated by 60 companies in the world. Now we need to get these guys to take it over, because we know that only about 7% of what we're throwing in those separate bins for recycling is actually making it to recycling. So I just wonder about, you know, how much of this is just a bit of theater and a bit of waste of time. And I wish we'd get a bit more serious, because it's a big problem.
Well, you know, that's the thing that we were talking about just last week in council. It's our turn next. Municipalities, one by one, are now arranging with the province. The province is taking over managing recycling, which is probably a better way to do it, because you really want to get up to where you pull the materials together and have real economy of scale to sell the materials. And so cities have the time to get the garbage part and the organics part absolutely right, because recyclable materials and the whole management of them and making sure that the producer of those plastics actually pays is now being lifted up and managed by the province. It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out.
Okay, and Larissa, unless you're sitting on the edge of your chair waiting to talk about garbage cans, I'm going to go to the next topic. And that would be doctors are going to be let off the hook for sick notes, a very, very welcome development. I certainly understand from an HR perspective why employers would want some kind of proof that you're genuinely sick, but it is clogging up doctors' offices with allegedly sick people, and it's a waste of the doctor's time.
Yeah, this makes sense to me. And it's, I read it, it said it's for the three kind of allotted sick days that you are entitled to. So you're entitled to those days. You almost don't, like, you don't have to prove that you're sick, I guess. You just say that you're sick. And I think this is about almost a trust thing. If you trust somebody to work at your company and you trust them to do the job that you pay them to do, you should trust them when they tell you they're sick. And I think it totally makes sense. And every little thing that you can do to free up doctors' time helps the whole system.
Yeah, Pavan, it's basically been sloughing off the work of an HR department or a supervisor to a doctor. And that has, as I said, clogged things up.
Yeah, I agree. It's a major waste of time. It's part of the, you know, the 20 hours a week the docs are wasting on admin and other activities. It's the reason they're charging membership fees to their clinics. Even public clinics are doing the same thing. So I think it makes a lot of sense. And we have to keep encouraging a good relationship between, you know, employers and staff. In England, it's an out of control problem actually right now with sick notes, and it's a sick offs, or as they call it in England, are a major issue. I don't think we have that kind of distrust between employer and employee in Ontario, but we do have to, you know, kind of move to things that are much more practical.
Let's leapfrog to something else about medicine. And Shelley, I'll start with you on this. There's a profile in the Star today about how doctors are using idle operating theaters on Saturdays and Sundays to get procedures done. Some purists will see this as the thin edge of the wedge. This is the beginning of the end of public health care, but I just see it as an efficient means of getting this stuff done.
No, if we keep people, if we can keep people who have enough income to cross the border in our health system, I think that you're going to have better aftercare, and it's easier for the family physicians to manage someone throughout their life and all of their conditions. And so this is about getting it done with the shorter wait time. What I worry about is this is a real shift in hospitals. If you start to use those operating rooms, it kind of changes the flow of the recovery rooms. I just hope they're managing the workload of the nurses and the health staff around it. But it means things like, you know, doctors that have a team behind them. There's the admin and the nurse and the orderlies and all of the rest. So if this over time becomes the thing that we're just constantly doing around the clock surgery, then we just have to make sure that we're also realizing we're going to pick up the bill for all of the assistance behind it so that the aftercare is good.
Pavan, I think a lot of people who have not interacted with the healthcare system of late don't know how many creative things are happening. I mean, for example, at Women's Hospital in Toronto, they do MRIs at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's brilliant. Listen, there's no secret that we're in a healthcare crisis, and you know we're declining rapidly. So it's great that everybody, from the government to physicians and hospitals, are looking at new systems and new approaches. And you know, I think part of the challenge, and it's not coming out here today in this discussion, but part of the challenge is whenever you hear the word private, people jump to the worst conclusion. And I think in this case, it's very clear that these physicians are renting these surgical suites. They're bringing in their own teams for the procedures, but the patient is being paid, the cost of the procedure is being paid by OHIP. And so as much as the physician has a private company, and most physicians do, in fact, have private companies. Yeah. All of our family docs do. You know, it's a great solution, and it allows us to leverage those unused facilities, MRIs, as you say, at nighttime and weekends as well. And I think, you know, one thing that's really important for Canadians to understand is that really in Canada, you know, we are the only G7 country without a dual track system, which this is not an example of. And critically, Quebec has actually had private health care since 2005. So, you know, there are a lot of things that we don't realize. I think it's important that we all stay calm as when we look at these new models and approaches, because it's critical for us to solve the situation we're in right now.
Well, and Larissa, this sets off alarm bells in some knitting circles, but I see it as a very efficient means of looking after a problem.
Yeah, I mean, this specific project, this pilot project, was designed around a low-risk procedure, hips and knees, right? And what's important to remember is the patient pays with their OHIP card. And, you know, we need massive systemic change. You can't just keep throwing money at a system that is fundamentally not working. You have to actually change how we're doing it. So, you know, this is an example of changing how we're doing it, using the resources we have, which are pretty limited in Ontario, shifting some things around. The patient doesn't see a difference in terms of money out of their pocket. They're just getting their hips and their knees faster.
Pavan, are you excited about Tim Hortons, the musical?
Listen, I'm so brokenhearted because I wrote a musical too and sent it in and they never replied. It was the true story about how a Newfoundlander in a town called Wynn by Chance is told by Tim Hortons that at long last he's won a $60,000 boat in his entire village. His entire village will be able to eat finally. But then he got an email saying, sorry, we made a mistake and we're just going to send you a $50 gift card. So anyways, good for Tim Hortons to try and distract us from the other stories. But let's look forward to not seeing it.
Yeah, Shelley Carroll, this was commissioned by Tim Hortons for their 60th anniversary. It's called The Last Timbit. And I can only imagine it's going to be sublime or it's going to be cringeworthy.
Oh, it's going to be sublime. This is what we specialize in. The Canadian theater has brought joy to the world with some of our things that seem quirky. Who thought that Come From Away would be beloved in the United States? But it is.
Okay, we're going to call it there. But thank you all. Good to have you today. Larissa Waller, Shelley Carroll, and Pavan Broch. And actually, Shelley, just before I let you go, since you are a city councillor, apparently the Cafe TO program going a lot better this summer.
Yes. We started early and we're going to be ready early.
Okay. So people won't be getting their permits in like on the 15th of July.
Exactly.
Okay.
Catch the round table. Round one at 7:45. Round two at 8:45. Weekday mornings on More in the Morning. News Talk 1010 Toronto.